What's up, entrepreneurs and business owners? Welcome back to the Stronger Business Podcast. I am super excited to be here today. We're talking about some things that I love. We're talking about business. We're talking about real estate, passive investments, ways to figure out how to build and live your dream life. So much experience in this room today. It's a guest that I've been super excited to talk to for a long time and just appreciate him joining us today in the studio. We're live in person in Athens. This is an entrepreneur, real estate guy that's a couple of blocks down from me here in downtown and getting a chance to catch up with Dave Mulkey. Welcome to the podcast,
Thank
man.
Thank you, Chad. I appreciate it. Looking forward to chatting with you today.
Man, I'm excited to talk. I have fell in love with real estate and rental real estate in particular. Little new to the commercial game of real estate, but learning fast and have made some mistakes in the last 15, 20 years of buying real estate and being a rental investor. And you've covered the spectrum. You've done a lot of cool stuff in a lot of different places, and I'm sure learned a lot along the way. And just excited to have you here, man, and share with our audience just some advice and stories and things that you've learned, and just tap into some of that knowledge and experience that's resulted in all the awesome Athens properties and success you guys are experiencing right now.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I love real estate too. I mean, I think about it morning, noon, and night, probably like you do. You drive down the road and, your head turning anytime you see a sign go up or, think about an opportunity. So, yeah, I'm glad to be here and look forward to talking to you about it.
Awesome, man. Well, real estate, I feel like, is such a trendy topic right now. Just like business, we're talking before we start recording, entrepreneurship is like the Instagram thing to do now, and everybody makes it seem easy. And real estate seems the same way. It's you should be in real estate. There's all these podcasts and different things talking about it like we're doing today. But for you, do you think everybody should own real estate? How did you get started in real estate? Was it a good decision, bad decision? Just in general, for the average entrepreneur out there looking for a different way, is it a good idea or a bad idea?
I think owning real estate's a great idea. I'm preaching to the choir, I know, talking to you about this, but I think at some level, everybody should own real estate. Uh-huh. Some people... maybe that ownership needs to be limited to their home and maybe their office through an office condo or something. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for folks that, maybe feel passionate about their W-2 job during the day to still have some passive income on the side and own a rental property or two, whether that be a car wash or a rental house or an office building or, there's just a lot of ways to get into the business. And I think there's a lot of sort of myths out there that people hear about, and they hear about the tenant who trashes the apartment or flooding, toilet. And I think and I think that's just enough concern or trepidation that it kind of keeps people stuck. It's not as scary as some people might make it to be. I think it's probably the oldest profession it's probably one of the oldest businesses that there actually is. Fundamentally, it's probably one of the most simple businesses in terms of inputs and outputs. There is some specialization and terminology and concepts that you have to know, but it's something that anybody with an eighth grade education or more can probably master if they have the want to, in them. For me, real estate was... a light bulb went off for me about making money while you sleep, when you're sick, when you're on vacation, your property is working for you. And I can't think of many other things that provide that. I was talking to you a little bit before we started recording that I had kind of a fundamental aha moment when I was a kid because my grandfather had been a commercial contractor for his whole life. And as a kind of a little side thing, once every few years, he would build a rental house when his business was slow otherwise, and he had carpenters he had to keep busy. And he retired at 65, passed away at 66. And even though he had been a prudent saver, it wasn't the insurance proceeds that got my grandmother through retirement. It wasn't 401k. It was the income from 8 or 9 houses that were paid for. And he devoted probably 0.5% of his time during his working years towards building that portfolio. But it provided a very nice living for my grandmother for probably another 30 years. And so for me, I realized, hey, what if instead of spending 0.5% of my time doing that and the rest of the time pursuing a W-2, what if I pursue, you know, this for 99% of my time? And it's gone largely as planned, you know.
That's awesome. I love that. And yeah, that's what appeals to me is the financial freedom side and the passive income side of you just win 3 different ways. You have cash flow and income, you're having appreciation, and tenants are paying down debt, so you're just almost double dipping on the equity side. And then my love language, the tax benefit. Mm-hmm. You get the tax incentives that offset other income that frees up more money to do more investments and more things with. And so my light bulb moment didn't start out the way I thought it would. I bought a bunch of rental houses during the recession at the courthouse steps. And for me, they were just rentals till I could flip them and make money. I saw the dangling side of mm-hmm. let's buy something and make a 20-30% return by flipping it in a year, 2 years. And things didn't bounce back quite like I had speculated. And I ended up holding a bunch of rentals and kind of figured out, wow, this is, if I map this out for a 7 or 10 year span, it'd be crazy to sell. And then that kind of transitioned into figuring out I like rental property. I don't love the houses I have, and I don't think they're necessarily the best investment for the 20 year kind of span. But so I ended up selling those. And then my wife and I were joking before, kind of similar stories on a different level. We decided to buy one property a year for 5 years, and in 5 years we'll be in a position for her. She can potentially walk away from her job. We'll have a portfolio of rentals and really be in a position of kind of building out our future and our retirement plan. And that, I think that ended up being 7 or 8 properties in 2 years. And
yeah,
it's just I've been lit on fire since then. But your first experiences, you know, for people that are looking to get into this, were your first experiences in like single family houses? Was it in duplexes, multifamily? Did you know what you were doing? How did you get the courage and the information to know what to do and when to do it?
Yeah. Well, I think the first, you know, they say you're motivated by inspiration or desperation. For me, it was probably desperation. You know, I'd flunked out of college. I was probably earning $15,000 a year, barely making it, and realizing that I didn't really have a path forward. That I think I had a lot of fear, to be honest, about not having a degree and what that would mean for me in the job market. Something I think when I was a teenager kind of clicked inside of me, and I don't know if it was rebellion or if it was just understanding how I'm wired as a person. But I think I realized I didn't really want to have a W-2 job and work for someone else. I just really wanted to be my own entrepreneur. Didn't know what that was going to look like. But, you know, like as a little kid or as a high school student, I told this story a few times. I had talked to my dad about this idea to start a teen club. And he told me, well, Dave, that's a great idea, but, you know, most of the revenue that comes in from clubs is alcohol sales. And there's one problem with this scenario. You know, teens are not old enough to drink. And I was so disheartened he had just taken the wind out of my sails totally. But something rose up inside of me, and I thought, he's wrong about this. Like, I've got to show him. And so without my parents' knowledge, I rented the National Guard Armory in our hometown.
No way.
I hired bands, and I hired off-duty policemen, And we started running a club at night. Like, you know, this didn't happen every week or anything. It might have only happened two or three times a year. But I'd have all my friends there working, parking the cars. We charged cover charge at the door. And so literally I would walk out of my house and tell mom and dad, oh, yeah, I'm going to the movies or whatever. And I'd roll in at like 11, and they would have had no idea. I'd have made like $3,000 or $4,000, which in the mid-80s was a lot
of
money.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And basically had run a nightclub for the night. And so the statute of limitations on that finally ran out. And I told my parents about it when I think I was in my 30s. But it was just that, you know, that understanding that you know, I'm going to find a way. I'm going to find a way to do something I want to do and make money and have fun while I'm doing it. So, but to answer your question, starting in real estate, it was literally ordering a infomercial, you know, real estate course, late night TV, you know, TBS at 2 a.m. And just realizing that, hey, wait a minute, I've seen someone do this. My grandfather did this. It's really not that hard. You know, you got to go paint the units from time to time and change carpet and all, but I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I told you before we came in here and started talking today, you know, I think the part of it that maybe I did that some people don't is when I ordered this infomercial, I wrote the goal down on paper. Like, I am committing to buy X numbers of properties over X numbers of years, you know. And it's funny, like when you have something on paper that you look at every day, it guides all those little small decisions throughout the day and weeks and months. And so before I knew it, I had bought duplexes and I was over there literally collecting around on Friday nights and painting units when tenants moved out and, you know, the whole works.
I love it. And that was, I think they say something like, I don't know, first there's having goals and having a plan, and then if you do that, you're like 200 times more likely to achieve it. Writing it down like 7 times is even more, and then telling somebody else like 10 times. So like,
right,
having goals or a plan or a roadmap, writing it down and telling people, I think that's a huge key to hold us all accountable and keep us excited, because it gets hard.
Yeah.
It gets scary. It gets tough. There's fear.
And
if you're committed to, yeah.
I think there's power in not having a plan B also.
Ooh.
I had no plan B.
Yeah, yeah. Stakes are a little higher.
Right. Yeah.
That's an aspect of it that definitely creates that urgency and just that drive to figure it out. And I think that's for most of us. I think there's probably, and it's awesome to hear you tell that you started with an infomercial, mm-hmm, to figure this thing out and have grown to where you're at today. I think there's a misconception that other people know what they're doing in business or real estate. And for all of us, especially for me, I just figured it out as I go.
Like, right.
I didn't have any idea what the heck I was doing. And you learn and figure it out and just do your best. And you make some mistakes and you learn from them and you get up and you do it again. And I don't know, you mentioned fun earlier. I think you all been able to do that through your brand now and a lot of things you're doing in Athens with experiences and things you're changing in the community. But I think business and real estate, it doesn't have to suck. It doesn't have, right, to be all this negative fear or bad tenants. It can be fun.
It is.
You can have awesome people live or work in the spaces you own. It's just, it doesn't have to be so stuffy or so serious or hidden or mysterious. It's fun. We're all in this together and we're all trying to just build an awesome life and community and place to,
right,
I think y'all say, love where you live and you work and you play. And
well, back then, you know, I didn't have, you know, corporate missions statements or staff or, you know, none of that. I mean, you sort of only get the privilege of doing that as you build some scale. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was just very, very organic blocking and tackling. Like, the thing that's nice about residential or even commercial real estate, it's a monthly cycle, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's very simple blocking and tackling. You know, you need to have tenants in the space. You need to collect the rent so that you can pay your mortgage, and you need to manage expenses. And so the one thing that I would say for people out there that are trying to do it organically, I think it's easy to get disheartened in the first few years. Because like, if you think about it mathematically, I don't know if you've ever taken a spreadsheet. I did this for my son just the other day. You know, I I created a spreadsheet where I modeled if he put in $100 every month, $1,200 a year, and he earned, you know, 10.4% or whatever the S&P's averaged over the years, and I showed him the power of compounding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's 21 years old, so I modeled it till he was 70.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was able to show him that, you know, he could have multi-millions of dollars by the time he was 70 with very manageable inputs. But what I really wanted him to see was how the balances were still so low 10 years in, 15 years in, 20 years in, because it's compounding. So all the real power was all the leverage and real massive sums were building at the end. And I think you kind of have to remember that in real estate too. It's a long game. You can get a little discouraged if you are looking through the lens sort of myopically of month by month. I think you have to kind of keep your head up and look to the horizon and say, hey, this is a 5-year deal. This is a 10-year deal. This is a 15-year deal. And that makes it long enough where you kind of move through some, you know, economic cycles. You've had enough principal reduction over time. You've probably now been able to really see some appreciation. And all of a sudden, you've really grown some equity. But it's easy sometimes at the end of a year or 2 years or 3 years to see, oh, man, I've only paid down $3,000 in principal. The value's only gone up or it's stayed flat. But you have to remember this is a long game.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what I found in modeling spreadsheets and everything I try to look at, I have the awesome experience of exposure to clients who have done this for 50 years and 30 years and seeing success and failures of on a tax return of when financially what's worked and what hasn't. I've kind of modeling that out. 7 years I found is that key point for me of at the 7-year mark in real estate, there's no risk. Like you stay in 7 years, you've pretty much eliminated all your financial risk at that point. And so I've seen that 7-year horizon, just if you'll commit to that and not let the work of the 12-month or the 24-month or the air condition breaks or a panic or the market drops 20%, like all that stuff scares people or brings up some sort of fear or bailout moment in year two and year three that you may break even, you may lose some money, but you're not going to make a whole lot of money or you're not going to financially move the needle. But if you commit to 7 years, I've found that's the place you can pretty much eliminate all your risk and really just change the equity situation of where you're at. And then the cool thing is once you get to 7 years, I found you're like, I don't want to sell this now. I want to hang on for another 10 years or 20 years. And so
I think we work in our little sphere of influence and our sort of sphere of capability. And so you just start where you are. You know, you're not going to probably have the acumen to go figure out the absolute best first purchase, located in the best spot where it's going to have the maximum appreciation. And that's okay, you know, if you know your market in your neighborhood where you live. Or, I mean, I think the no-brainer best thing anybody can do who's young is owner-occupied duplex or quadruplex.
Yes.
You know, buy that to live in one side, rent the other.
Yep.
You know, you're getting lots of leverage. You're getting a lot of favorable treatment with it being your primary residence. And then if you want to sell that in 2 years and, you know, defer the gain and – or not defer it. I guess it's tax-free if it's your primary residence. But, you know, that's another way, if you have time on your side, to kind of run that playbook. You know, and sort of get started, sort of dipping your feet in the water.
Man, I love that advice. And it's so much even more impactful coming from somebody that's grown things to where you have is, it's so trendy and sexy right now to, I'm trying to find a multifamily complex. I'm trying to buy an apartment building. Like you've never owned real estate before. Like the odds of you knowing what you're doing on that level or screwing that up or being able to get that funding is just harder. For me, if I hadn't started with $70,000 starter houses as rentals, I would have screwed up. I would have financially been a train wreck. And so to hear you say that and say, hey, start where you're at and just get some experience and learn. And you can You can change your life with a handful of residential rentals or a couple of duplexes, especially if you're living in part of it, and make a – over 5 years, it's life-changing. You don't have to own shopping centers or own student living houses and all the complexes and all the crazy stuff out there. And it's – I feel like there's so much more of a market, and it's so much easier to find and to take action on something on a much smaller level.
Like if people ask me what we've done, I mean, I don't have any more elevated of a business plan than that. It's really scale and replication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how we grew it organically. It was, hey, if this works on one duplex, what about five? And what if five became 10 and 10 became 40 and 40 became a 200 unit complex? But it's the same playbook. It's literally the same playbook. And so there's no, you know, there's no magic.
Yeah. Do you think people should take on debt and just personally own things by themselves? You think they should seek investors? What's your thoughts on growing and scaling just organically through internal ownership and bank loans versus investors or partners or those things? Is there any right way or wrong way you think that you've learned throughout the years?
I think there are some concepts that are pretty important. But I think within these concepts, there's continuums based on different people's risk tolerance, I think.
Sure.
Leverage is not a good thing from a conservative standpoint, you know. But I was 100% leveraged when I bought my first property, right?
Yep.
But where I was in terms of my risk profile, I had nothing to lose, right? I mean, I was 25 years old, 24 years old. And so I think the answer depends a little bit.
Sure.
But I definitely think as people, I think I would caution people against being too leveraged.
Okay.
You know, I think I would probably recommend people find – well, I'll tell you, in the first project that I did, I had a friend of mine. He was my age. He had inherited, I think, around $100,000, which for a 24, 25-year-old in the mid-'80s was a lot of money. but he was a very close friend of mine, and we kind of tackled things the following way. We said, hey, you don't really want to get into running and managing properties and collecting rent and turning units and all that, and I need to scrap and hustle a little bit. So what if you put your money in on behalf of us? Half of it will be a loan to me. Half of it is your equity contribution. And then I'll charge the partnership a management fee, market rate. And just worked out that that market rate management fee was almost exactly what I would need to repay him on the promissory note.
Perfect.
For the half of the equity he put up.
Yeah.
So it was a way for me to put sweat equity in alongside someone who was at a different place in terms of their liquidity and ability to invest. So leverage will get you in trouble if everything doesn't go right.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I'd probably recommend that people either invest in the scale that they can raise little chunks of equity to do themselves, or find someone that you pair up with that might be in a position to put some equity.
Yeah, I like that. And I completely agree with that. I think when we're young or we're trying to figure stuff out, you can go 100% in and leveraged and put way too much in one basket because you're trying to grow and figure it out and leverage everything you have. But as you get into multiple properties or multiple things, I think you can make more money with debt, but it comes with more risk. And there's one thing for certain. I think anybody sitting in either chair in the history of this podcast will tell you, things are going to go wrong at some point. Things are going to get hard and financially stressful for one reason or another in business or in real estate. And so if you're too leveraged or you don't have the cushion, liquid sitting, cash sitting aside to weather that storm, you are forced to sell something or you are forced to be in a position to do something that's just not going to financially work out for you and cause a lot of stress and headache. But I do think it's easier than people realize to have the situation you talk about where I'm going to do the work. I'll go find the property. I'll build out the model. I'll manage it. There's a lot of other people that don't have the time or desire or the mindset to do that. And so if you can take somebody with capital that wants to be a real estate investor without putting in the work, and you find somebody willing to put in the work, It's an awesome team. So
I think it's got the chance to do this. I didn't get the chance. I never ended up getting around to doing this, and I kind of have some regrets about it.
Regrets from you?
A great way to go. One great way to go about this. I mean, we were just talking about if you're young, you can run the playbook of owner occupying rental property. And maybe even being willing to move every 2 years.
Oh God, you know, you crush it, right? Yeah.
So that deal works really well. But there also might be people. And look, I never give people financial advice. I know you do that a lot, but there could be people. Like, let's just say you're, you know, a family in your late 30s, early 40s. You've got kids that are starting to become teenagers. You're making a decent salary W-2. You've built a little bit of, you know, nest egg. I mean, you know, I actually know a family that they bought an Airbnb rental in Watkinsville, and it's the family project, right?
The kids come, they're teaching their kids about business.
So one kid's more in charge of kind of making sure the housekeeping turn gets done. One is doing the marketing and doing the leasing. And you know, there's a way to go about that where you take some of your nest egg and take it out of equities and put it into a rental, and you have a family project to teach your kids alongside you. You know, just common sense. One thing I did do is when my son was a sophomore at Georgia, I said, I'll help you find a rental house, and we'll go to the bank together, and I will loan you the down payment. And we'll get an owner-occupied loan for you. And so his sophomore year, we bought a little four-bedroom ranch in the, you know, Timothy area. And he got some of his friends to come rent from him, and he had a lease agreement. And it was his job to mow the grass and pay the bills and collect the rent. And it was amazing how much he learned just common sense, practical stuff. Now, it wasn't side by side with me showing him as much as I was talking about in the other example.
Yeah.
But man, he would come to me and say, "Hey, Dad, you know, tell me about, you know, mortgages or credit scores, or how do you file for a homestead exemption or whatever." So it was a really great learning tool. He kept it rented the whole time he was in college. He was living there for free. I mean, the rent was sufficient to cover the mortgage. And for this particular short horizon, which was like, you know, 2019 till now, I mean, he's seen massive
appreciation. Oh, yes. So, heck yeah.
You know, it's been great.
That's awesome. I love that family project or learning or teaching. I think, I mean, your son, he learned stuff that, I mean, there's 30, 40, 50-year-old business owners that ask me those questions now about homestead exemption and mortgages and qualifying for loans. So that teaches something at an age that most people never learn. I think that's super cool.
And it helped establish credit for him.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times no credit is almost as bad as bad credit, you know, if you don't have some kind of track record. So getting the utilities in his name, having the mortgage in his name has also established a credit.
I love it. I really love the advice of living in part of what you're owning and renting it out. Or if you're in the flipping situation of personal houses, that's a really great way to turn your personal house into a huge asset and make some tax-free capital gains and leverage that and just learn about real estate through living there and buying and selling and then mixing in rental property. I know for me, I started my journey. I will say this from a financial advice standpoint. The place I really try to hammer home for people before I get into this story is you just got to spend less than you make. You can't invest in anything, time or money, unless you're spending less than you're making. Right. And you got to have time and money. And so if you're spending every dollar, or you're buying nice cars, or you're buying the nicest personal house, or everything is going in and out and that kind of rat race model, you just can't invest in anything. You don't have the time or the money. And I think starting out and living in what you're renting or living in something that's not where you want to be, but you see a path of building passive income or building wealth and then buying what you want, it changes things. I know for me, I lived in a trailer off of North Avenue, and I owned four rental houses. I owned four houses, but I still lived in a trailer. I was paying, I think, $250 a month lot rent. And I think I bought that trailer for like $20,000, financed it 100%. 15 years later, sold that trailer for like $26,000. And so like it just gave me the capital in my 20s of everything I was making to put back into real estate and rentals. Right. And but I could have easily went and bought a house personally or built a house or done something and spent all my money and I wouldn't have had any assets or any passive, nor you would know, I have learned anything along the way. And so
Well, you know, we were talking about this before we started. I think there's a concept they don't really talk about a lot in school, which is opportunity cost. I think, you know, what you're saying is, you know, your opportunity cost on that extra standard of living, nobody ever goes to the trouble to actually have the courage to look that in the eye and say, what is this standard of living costing me? And it would be a very simple spreadsheet to make. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, if I was living at this standard versus this standard in 30 years at this return, it would be worth, you know.
My word.
So you living in that trailer, you know, you were deploying your other income and everything into things that were earning for you. And we talked about this before before we started today. You know, there are so many things that, you know, they're either in the bucket of things that appreciate or things that depreciate.
Yep.
And, you know, the more you can take things out of that depreciating bucket and putting them into things that appreciate, even just things like $10,000 extra on a car or, you know, whatever. I mean, it can turn into large sums if you have any kind of time on your investment horizon.
Absolutely. And just the options that offers you 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, not even, 30 years. It's massive. But the options of like financial freedom or income or other investments, you have experience, you have money, you have flexibility. I think it's amazing for people. And you've just been able to continue to replicate that on a larger scale as you go. And kind of before we wrap up and kind of get into the max out moment of the podcast, I want to touch on for a second, you've been able to combine two things that I don't think I've ever seen before of taking real estate and being a real estate investor and making it such a huge win for the community and the experience and the tenant. Why have you done that? How have you done that? Most people see it as I can own real estate and be this tough landlord and pay me by the fifth, or I come beating on your door, or hey, how do I spend the least amount of money and get the most rent? You've had a different approach where it's a partnership. And not only that, it's an investment in things that don't directly generate income, bistro lights and landscaping and tables for people to enjoy and just awesome places to have outdoor experiences and awesome shopping experiences and get the right tenants. How, why, what have you learned and how did you arrive there? And why are you doing all this extra stuff?
Yeah. Well, I don't want it to sound like any of this is altruistic. I mean, mm-hmm. there is a large bit of satisfaction that I get. I'm a visually oriented person. It's mm-hmm. very rewarding to me to see things progress from maybe a rundown, less than ideal circumstance or situation to one where things are refurbished. And, you know, I mean, I really get a lot of pride in enjoyment in seeing things become taken to their highest and best use. So I think at Pelias, I mean, that's definitely one of our, you know, core missions is to find things that are not at their highest and best use. And to try to figure out with all the tools that we have in the toolbox, you know, how do we get it there? That's very rewarding to me. I also feel, and maybe this is bad investment advice a little bit, but I have some emotional attachment to what I do. I don't have an agnostic kind of view as if I were just trading stocks that I didn't care about. I mean, I worked at Beechwood in college at George Gibson's Menswear. I mean, there's a feeling that goes alongside the projects too, but it's also I think wise investing too. You know, I've always believed that if you're in the commodity business, price is the only thing that's going to differentiate you. And I knew that I never wanted to be in the commodity business. And I also think having come from a little bit of a background of being creative musically, and I enjoy the process of making things not a commodity. And so when you're not a commodity, you know, price isn't the differentiator. I think that's good business. I think it comes with better margins. I think it comes with better occupancy rates, you know, which it really becomes a bit of a flywheel, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a really well-maintained, beautiful property that you really ascribe to manage very well, that should bring you not only tenants that are willing to pay a little more for that, but I also think when things get tough or bumpy or whatever, you're not, you know, if you're really well located, well maintained with attention to detail, you're probably not going to suffer the vacancy loss that maybe other projects do. And so it's not just all selflessly motivated. I think it's also just good investment strategy as well.
I agree. And I think the awesome thing is that's in my opinion, the key for business and real estate is there's a uniqueness. There's something different. There's something that you're providing that's not on every corner or not that it, the same as other businesses or other real estate allows. And so I love that. I know as somebody here, as a resident of Athens and somebody in the community, it's been game-changing to see and to experience. And it's just fun. It brings smiles to people's faces. Yeah. The Christmas stuff, the being able to sit outside a chicken salad chick and have an awesome environment to eat lunch and places to go around Athens and shop and do places that were terrible to go to when I was in school or in the, you know, 2000s. You've been able to redo, and you and your team have just made it fun and awesome and exciting. And so I appreciate it, and I see what it's doing and probably inspiring other owners of real estate and other investors to lift their game a little bit and help everybody provide something a little better for their tenants and for the customers coming to shop there.
Well, it's like also that it's kind of that same premise, though. It takes a little while to get scale and to get critical mass. Like it doesn't
the patience
have,
and the
It doesn't have to be.
Don't look for the immediate return.
It's just blocking and tackling, small improvement over and over and over.
That's
and over.
Good. I kind of, as a numbers guy, I kind of need to hear that.
Yeah.
There's some looking at that long view, and I in several things I've read and seen that y'all have, it's all about a longer view on things and giving up some short-term profits and short-term gains for that longer view. And that's a mindset that I think more of us need to adopt and quit focusing on cap rates or what I can make today or exactly what's happening.
Well, I'll say this. I do think when you have – so we principally are buy and hold investors. And when you make that decision, a lot of other behaviors change and the way that you analyze things. And look, I'm not the first one to do that. I mean, I learned a lot about that just from reading about, you know, Warren Buffett and stuff. He's a buyer of businesses. He's not going to watch a stock ticker. He's not going to care what his stock price is doing in any sort of period of time. And that's a byproduct of thinking about it differently. You know, when you're playing the long game, when you're building to hold and build something that over time is going to be better, I don't think you get as caught up in cap rates and the, you know, all that stuff.
You don't care about what something's
worth. It forecloses
right now,
some opportunities for you.
Yeah.
But I would argue that a lot of times those opportunities might be distractions.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, 100% for all of us. And
yeah.
It's kind of the entrepreneurial curse, I think, for us is the distractions and the lack of discipline and focus and funneling that down and saying, hey, I'm committed to this property or these types of properties for the long view. And that's really cool. And this has been packed full of wisdom and advice, and so much that's been shared here already is going to change our lives of how we look at real estate and what we do and invest in and take some action and just feeling comfortable and confident in moving forward for our audience and some things they've been thinking about and considering. I think somebody on your level being able to share this and explain it is so cool. But that brings us to our max out moment, the chance where we can even get stronger and learn even more. Part of the Stronger Business Podcast, we always end the episode with a max out moment. Dave's max out moment, if you could leave the audience with one takeaway, if they didn't remember anything else, one tip, something to go out and do, read, engage in, take action on, what it could be, whatever you want it to be. What's your max out moment?
I would say, I guess I'll fold a couple together. I think there is power in committing to an action if you put it to writing. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're kind of teetering on maybe thinking about dipping your feet into the waters of investing in real estate, set a measurable goal about that. And then I would say, once you make that decision, if you aren't careful, you can get really overwhelmed and distracted because there's so many different types of real estate and we're a big city with all these sub-markets. So I would say put blinders on and just focus on what you know. So if you're going to commit to buying a rental house, draw lines on a map. Hey, I'm going to look in this area from this street to this street, this area to this area, and I'm just going to patiently watch and learn everything I can about the sales that are happening, the purchases, you know, what rent rates are here. And that could turn into some very actionable things like going on QPublic and learning how things are assessed. It could involve sending letters out to people in that area. But don't become overwhelmed. Reduce this market to a very, very small specific sub-market that you can become an expert in and commit to it.
Man, I love that. That is one of the most tactical pieces of advice and best max out moments we've ever had of how do I do this without getting overwhelmed? And you just, that's the golden piece of advice for people and our listeners is, yeah, find out where you want to buy and bookmark that, learn everything you can about it, be patient, and don't look at anything else. Learn that area and buy that area. I love that, man. Well, this has been awesome. I have learned a ton. I have thoroughly enjoyed this. I appreciate you joining us. I'm excited to see what's in the future for you guys and just really appreciate all you're doing and appreciate you joining us today. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Chad. I enjoyed it.
Thank you all for listening to the Stronger Business Podcast. Share with whoever you think may be interested or currently investing in rental real estate, and we'll see you next week. You know I got it. If you wanna come get it, stand there.